भी चलो, ये भी चलो।
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नम ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। फैकल्टी मेंबर्स ऑफ JNMC and dear students, I am very happy to be in your midst once again, although I am seeing all of you for the first time, but I have come here to this institution on many occasions in the last many years. All of you are standing at the cusp, at a very critical juncture of your medical careers, the very beginning of your medical education. Without education, nothing can happen. Civilization is based on education, in whichever field. And all of you have embarked on the field of medicine. Some of you will become surgeons in various disciplines. Some may go into medical fields, but regardless, I will refer to all of these in general as medicine. It's a very vital and important function that all of you will discharge in the society. And now you will be studying in your college so many different subjects: biochemistry, anatomy, physiology, pathology, many other subjects. So you will not find any subject in your syllabus titled spirituality. So then the question arises that, is it really necessary or even helpful for medical students to even discuss this topic of spirituality? After all, we have come here to be doctors. We have not come here to be saints. So, what is the need for us to understand this? And I'll come to that in a few minutes. You see, traditionally in India and all over the world, in all the different cultures, medicine and spirituality were very much interconnected, very deeply connected. Doctors were usually saints. All saints may not have been doctors, but saintly people across religions. We are not speaking of any one particular religion. They were generally very saintly. They lived very renounced lives. They had a spirit of sacrificing themselves for the welfare of the people of the world. So they didn't bother so much about their own well-being. They sacrificed their lives to care for others. This has always been the spirit of the medical community in the past, across the world. So the spirit of caring, the spirit of sacrificing, the spirit of serving has always been the hallmark of doctors throughout the centuries. Today, unfortunately, we see a very big shift in this mindset, in this approach towards the field of medicine. Whilst we see, certainly, many doctors and many students entering into the field of medicine for noble purposes. Medicine has been known to be the most noble profession in human society. And even today, there are many, many doctors and students who approach it in that way. However, it is also unfortunately true that there are many, many others who approach this field right from the inception of the medical studies and way into their medical careers, not with primarily a sense of service. Even if the sense of service is there, it is not very prominent. Mostly, what is it that drives many people to take up this career? Because I interact with people in the society very, very intimately and have been for many years, including students in medical colleges, their parents, and very largely, what drives people or students to take to medical careers these days is that it is a glamorous profession, there is prestige associated with it, and also that you can make a lot of money. So that is not to say that everybody is like this. As I said, there are many who are actually driven by the passion for serving humanity. And there are some who have a mixed idea. Yes, I want to serve, but in the meanwhile, I also want to make a lot of money and get a lot of recognition and respect in the society. So it is not a bad thing to want recognition and respect in society. It's not a bad thing to earn a decent amount of money. But the principal point is whether our hearts are imbued with the spirit of service. Or are we approaching this only from a very commercial point of view? I was seeing a video some months ago during the COVID pandemic time when it was at its peak. And there was one doctor in America who was giving a short lecture. And he made something that I found very interesting. He said, modern medicine is not about preventing disease. Modern medicine is meant for curing disease. He said, we are in the field of curing. We are not in the field of preventing. That is another field. So I was very surprised to see this statement. So we see a huge shift in our approach to the medical sciences and the medical profession. From a field that primarily focused on caring, we have now come to a field which focuses only on curing. Curing is a very important part of caring, but there is much more to caring than simply curing. And as your professors will tell you, as time goes by in your 5.5 years before you get your final MBBS after the internship, that it is not only about giving medicines or performing a surgery, there is a lot more that is involved in your role as a doctor. And even if you become a medical teacher, still these principles will be valid. So actually, medicine and spirituality from time immemorial have been very much intimately connected. So let me first discuss these two terms. What is medicine and what is spirituality? And then I'll come to the connection between the two. Now, this is probably your third or fourth day in this institution. So you're also very new. Perhaps you're not even familiar with your professors yet. Maybe you don't know which subjects you're going to study in the next semester and so on. But in general, all of us have this understanding that medicine, in short, is a science of keeping the body healthy. And it includes essentially three things. prevention of disease, number one. Number two, diagnosis and treatment. And third, other related items. By related items, I mean things like understanding how drugs are produced, how the medical pharmacology, many other things that are essential, which you may not actually be using it directly in your treatment of patients, but you have to have that knowledge, you have to have that background with you, otherwise you will not be able to discharge your functions. So these are broadly three areas. Now what we see in the modern medical approach, as I mentioned to you from that American doctor's video, is modern medicine focuses on point numbers 2 and 3. And to some degree on prevention of disease. There is something there, it is not neglected, but it is not the primary focus. You see, in traditional medicine in India, and medicine is very old as humanity, because so long, all since the time human beings have existed, they have had medical problems. And therefore there has been a need for doctors, for medical science. So India also has a very rich heritage of medical science and treatment. You have Ayurveda, you have the Siddha medicines, you have the Unani medicines system. So many, many traditional systems, including the folk medicine systems, which are also effective in some ways, although they may not be based on strong scientific foundations as modern sciences. But there are other sciences like Ayurveda, Siddha, Unani, which are very strong foundations. So these traditional medical systems in India, and also I guess in other parts of the world, were focused primarily on prevention of disease. For example, in Ayurveda they say, Svasthasya Svasthya Rakshanam, to keep a healthy person healthy is the first principle of medical science. How to keep a healthy person healthy. So it's not that we wait till the person becomes diseased and then we treat the patient. But the goal of the doctor is to ensure that as far as possible the individual does not fall sick. And then by chance, if there is some disease, because there will be disease however much you try to prevent it, then you can treat. So traditional medical systems have focused on prevention as the first course of action. It means a lifestyle of a certain kind. It means an educational system of a certain kind. And then when there is some disease or ailment, then there is curative therapy available. But the modern medicine focuses on the other two aspects, especially diagnosis and treatment. And because of that, we see that I'm interacting with many generations of students and doctors over the last many years. And I see some of the older doctors, they lament that the modern generation of doctors don't have the kind of clinical skills that they used to have. Because now, in the modern medical system, there is very easy reference to diagnostic equipment and diagnostic investigations. So earlier the doctors did not have the technology available. But now, at the smallest indication of something, of some doubt, then there is some MRI, there is a CT scan, there is blood tests, there are so many things that are required. These things may be essential sometimes, yes. But when a doctor loses his or her clinical skills, then the doctor is losing out on something very foundational, very, very, very fundamental. So therefore, when you study your first 2 or 3 years of MBBS, and actually the whole MBBS course, please ensure that you get your fundamentals very, very strong in the subjects that you study, including the practical things. So here we see that the emphasis is essentially on diagnostics. So we divert all our energies to that and we depend on that. And we don't give focus to our basic abilities as a doctor, as a clinical physician, or even a surgeon for that matter. So this approach needs some change. It needs a change of mindset. There is no harm in employing technology at all, but we must balance it with the proper clinical skills. Another difference between modern medical science and the traditional medical sciences is that the modern medical science deals exclusively with the body, the physical body. Anatomy, physiology that you will study in the first year is exactly that. And modern medical science does not acknowledge, does not recognize anything beyond the body. They speak of the mind, but even that is not well developed. Psychology, psychiatry, they are not very well developed sciences as compared to the other medical sciences. And then also they give, their understanding is that the mind, the emotions, etc. are basically products of the brain or the nervous system. So we see that there is no concept of anything subtle. And even if there is something subtle, it is just a byproduct of certain electrochemical functions in the brain or in the rest of the body and so on. So this is one drawback of the modern medical science. They do not understand the mind properly. They do not understand the concept of intelligence properly. They do not understand emotions properly, which are so integral to our lives. And definitely, modern medical science does not have an understanding of what we call the soul or the Atma. So that is the realm of spiritual knowledge, of spiritual science. Because modern medical science follows a certain paradigm, a certain approach, a method. And the spiritual sciences have a different approach. So therefore, we see another distinction between the modern sciences and the traditional sciences. Now, as we all know, human needs are diverse. It is not that we only have physical problems of disease. Sometimes there is hunger, we need food. Sometimes we need some entertainment. Sometimes we need some friends to talk to. Sometimes we have some intellectual need to be fulfilled, so we like to read some books, we like to do some intellectual activity. Sometimes we want some physical sporting activity. So we have diverse needs, and for that we need the physical body. So it is very important to take care of our physical body. But that is not everything in our human life. The physical body, as important as it is only a vehicle that is meant to fulfill our many, many needs and desires in life. So therefore, medical science, as important and vital and crucial as it is, addresses only one part of our needs. So we should certainly not neglect medical science, but we should also understand that it is not complete. That medical science, in order to be effective, must also be complemented by other sciences, by other disciplines, by other fields of knowledge that will help the doctor to deal with the patient in a complete, in a holistic way. Because ultimately, what does the doctor want? The doctor wants the welfare, the well-being of the patient. And again, as your professors will tell you as time goes on, it is not only about your medical skills that will make you a good doctor. It is also about how effective you are as a communicator. How nicely are you communicating to the patients? How are you handling the relatives of the patients who are very disturbed? How are you empathetic to the pain and suffering of the patients and the family? How are your leadership skills? How are your human relationship skills? How are you dealing with the nursing staff, with the other staff? How are you dealing with your fellow doctors? So a lot of this is involved. It is not only your medical knowledge and your surgery and other clinical skills. So therefore, there is a lot that needs to be done. And so a doctor, to be a complete doctor, must not only be good in the medical subjects and skills, but must also be aware of other sciences. Because ultimately, what do we want to be? We want to be happy. You know, many people go to different places of worship. Some may go to temples, some may go to mosques, some will go to church, some will go to Gurudwara, some will go to any other place of worship. Have you heard of anybody who approaches or goes to a place of worship and prays to God, "God, you have given me so much happiness, please give me at least a little suffering in my life"? Does anyone go to the temple and ask for suffering? Nobody. Everybody goes because they want some relief from suffering. Why? Because everybody wants happiness. To be happy is the basic instinct of all living entities. Even an animal, a bird, wants to be happy. They don't want suffering. So human happiness is our goal. And in achieving human happiness, there are many dimensions, as I have discussed briefly earlier. And one of the most important disciplines is spirituality, where we understand something higher than what the medical science can teach us. Something that is beyond the body, even beyond the mind, even beyond our emotions, beyond our intelligence. That is what spirituality addresses. So now, let us start with what spirituality is. Spirituality involves understanding the following. Now that we have discussed briefly what is medicine and what are the traditional and modern approaches to medicine, now let me discuss briefly what spirituality is. I will try to give you some very broad, general definitions. It does not matter what religion you follow. It does not matter whether you are an atheist. But this kind of understanding goes beyond that. And I'm sure some of you may be aware that the World Health Organization, WHO, has included in its definition of health, not just physical health, mental health, but also spiritual health. This is very interesting. So even the Western world has appreciated the need for some spiritual understanding of the individual. And because the spiritual aspect of the human being is so important for the well-being and happiness of the individual, the doctor must have some understanding. So this kind of mental approach is understood by all of you right from the beginning of your medical education. Then when you actually graduate, become doctors and surgeons, then you will be able to take care of your patients in the best possible way. So, spirituality can have three aspects. The first is to understand my identity. Who am I? If I may ask you, who are you? You will tell me your name. But from a spiritual point of view, that answer is not sufficient. Let's say you are driving, I don't know which cars are now, Scorpio car. And suppose I ask you, "So my dear sir, who are you?" And you say, "I'm Scorpio." Will you say that? No, Scorpio is the car in which you are sitting. But you are different from your Scorpio car. So similarly, when you say, "My name is such and such," yes, that refers to your body. It refers to your vehicle. But there is something else that underlies the existence of your body. So according to various scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and any other spiritual disciplines, we understand that the living entity is essentially a spiritual spark. A spark of spiritual energy that activates this body and makes it alive. That is why we see that at the time of death, it is not possible to revive that person back to life. Once the person has been declared dead, by whatever symptoms are there, the brain dead, or whatever other symptoms that you have, you can't bring that person back to life. Why is that? From a spiritual point of view, we can understand it's because the soul has left the body. So the soul, according to spiritual knowledge, is life. The soul is consciousness. And this is where there is some difference between the spiritual approach and the modern medical approach. Because modern medicine or modern medical science thinks of consciousness as a byproduct of the chemical reactions and electrochemical processes in the nervous system and the human body as a whole. But from spiritual understanding, we see that the living entity, the real you, the real me, is this Atma, the soul. Every religion has some concept of the soul. So therefore, this is one very important point that distinguishes spirituality as a special field. The second is, what is true happiness? Now, if you look at happiness only from the point of view of the body, or the mind, or the ego, then you have one kind of answer. Somebody may say happiness means to get a lot of money. Someone may say happiness means to win the World Cup. Someone will say happiness means to enjoy life, to go to the movies, to eat good food, wear good clothes. So everybody may have some different idea of what is happiness. So we want to be happy, but we have an idea of happiness that is based on this body. Whatever gratifies and satisfies this body, we call that happiness. But from the spiritual point of view, that is not happiness. That in fact will cause distress in the future. One time, many years ago, I was in a medical college in Bombay giving a lecture in the anatomy department. And the professor of anatomy was, before the lecture, took me on a tour of the department. And she showed me certain bodies and other things that were there. And she opened up lungs and it was black. And she said, this person has been a heavy smoker. So somehow we have got these lungs to show our student. But these lungs, it was like charcoal black. So the professor was saying that we have to show our students all these things when they understand anatomy. They have to learn all these things. So somebody is smoking a cigarette and then thinks that he is enjoying that smoke, but doesn't realize that this kind of happiness is actually killing him. It will cause various types of cancer. It will ruin his lungs. It will cause so many other medical problems. So in other words, what we think is happiness on the basis of satisfying this body is actually not happiness according to the spiritual point of view. So in spirituality, the concept of happiness is something very unique, something very divine, something related to the soul, not merely to the body. The body is also important. We cannot unnecessarily put the body through suffering. But we should know where to draw the line. So that is where spirituality comes in. And spirituality and the material approach to life must be harmonized. And third, also very important, what is life's ultimate goal? When you speak of ultimate goal, if I ask you the question, it's a very deep question. Can I ask any of you, what is your goal of life? It's a very deep question. Any of you like to answer? Yes. To have peace of mind. Okay. Anybody else? What is your goal of life? Have you ever thought about this? Anybody else? Yes.
Internal satisfaction.
Internal satisfaction. Okay. Yes.
To die happy.
You are already thinking about death. You know, one time I was asking one gentleman, why don't you come to some of the spiritual lectures? He said, no, I have no time. So I said, why don't you have no time? He said, because I'm busy in my business. It's so difficult to find time. So why are you working so hard in your business? He said, well, because I have to earn money. So I said, why do you want money? Well, I have to maintain my family, I have to eat. So why do you have to maintain yourself? Because I have to survive, I have to eat, I have to be healthy. So why do you want to keep yourself healthy? So I want to live. And why do you want to live? And that person didn't have an answer. He was thinking, oh, nobody has asked me this question before. Yes, we are all doing so many things, but ultimately we are doing it to live. And why do we want to live? What is the goal of our life? Very fundamental and important question, but very little attention is paid to such fundamental topics, either in school or in college or at home or in the society at large. So spirituality will focus on this question very, very importantly, that the goal of life is not merely to eat, drink and be merry, khao, piyo, moj karo. No, that is not the goal of life. That even the animals are doing. The animals are also eating, the animals are sleeping, the animals are mating, and probably they are doing it without getting problems of sugar and high BP and so on. They don't have to come to a hospital and pay huge bills. But they are surviving. So the speciality of human beings is that we can ask and answer such questions. What is the goal of my life? Does my life end with death? You said you want to die happy. Is there anything after that? These are the questions that will be answered by spirituality. Is death the end of everything? In the field of medical science, you will have to deal a lot with death. That is a painful part of your profession. You have to see suffering and death firsthand all your life. But is there anything after that? That question is very important. So spirituality deals with it. So now let us see. Materialism versus spirituality. So this is an important distinction to make. I've already spoken a little bit about spirituality. So let us see, what do we mean when we say somebody is materialistic? You have a general idea what we mean. So when one is overly concerned with the physical body and its comforts and enjoyment, and when one believes that enjoyment, money and possessions are the most important things in life, that is said to be materialistic. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the physical body is not important. I'm not saying that we don't require money. I'm not saying that we don't require certain degree of comforts and some facilities in our life. No, we all need something. The question is when it becomes excessive. Ye dil mange more, and more and more, we want more. Do you know what the biggest disease in the world now is? You're going to be medical students. What is the most prevalent disease? Any idea? Yes. Greed. Excellent. I think you should get a special prize. What is your name? Pallav?
Anurag.
Arnab?
Anurag.
Anurag. Okay, Anurag, thank you. That is a brilliant answer. Now, generally when you ask this question to people, they will say, well, you know, HIV or nowadays, of course, COVID, and then, you know, ischemic heart disease or mental health problems or so many other things, which are all very widely prevalent, undoubtedly. But the biggest problem in the world is, I want more and more and more. This is the real disease in the world. And therefore, whatever people have in life, they are not satisfied. They just want more and more and more. You know, there is a little funny story about this very wealthy man. His wife had some fever one day. Her temperature was about 101 degrees. Now it so happened that there was a domestic help, a maidservant in the house, and she also had fever. And her fever was 104. So the lady of the house was not very intelligent, and she was also very egoistic. So she began to quarrel with her husband and said, "I am the mistress of the house and I have only wanted 101. She is the servant and she has 104. She has more than me." And the husband tried to explain to her that, "Look, it's only fever. It's not that she has more money than you or more degrees than you," but she would not listen. So our Acharya Srila Prabhupada used to say that this is precisely the condition of people in this world. We are simply wanting to increase the fever of life. This person has 10 lakh rupees, I want 20 lakhs. That person has 1 crore, I want 2 crores. My neighbor has 1 car, I want 2 cars. The other person has such a flourishing practice, I want a better practice. It is not so much what will make me happy. It is how much others have and I must have more than them. Because these are the things that unfortunately give prestige in the society. In the olden times, the teachers were the most respected because they gave knowledge. So knowledge was the respected value in the society. Today, money has become the respected value in society. If somebody has money, that person gets respect. If the person has knowledge, there's some respect, but not like it used to be earlier. So this is because we are becoming more and more feverish in our materialism. We are never satisfied with whatever money we get, and therefore we resort to all sorts of unethical means. And unfortunately, even in the medical profession, even though there are many, many ethical doctors, there are also many unethical doctors who resort to many unethical practices just out of greed. Spirituality, let us say what spirituality is not. Spirituality does not neglect the body, but it emphasizes that we have a higher spiritual nature and it is important that we must all realize it. Spirituality makes us think and act beyond enjoyment, money and possessions. Spirituality does not deny that these things have a place in your life. But it says, look, don't go overboard. Don't do too much of it. Learn to balance your life. Learn to be satisfied with what your destiny has provided for you. Work hard. Work smart, work intelligently, work honestly, and then be satisfied with what your destiny provides. And reserve your time and energy for thinking of things that are higher. And therefore spirituality gives us real purpose and happiness in life. Now this question may come up. When we speak of spirituality, immediately the question arises, is that the same as religion? Because now religion has become the cause of so much conflict and misunderstanding and hatred in this world. Very, very unfortunate. Very tragic. It is because people everywhere, cutting across religions, are misunderstanding what true religion is. So is there a connection between spirituality and religion? The answer is yes, there is a connection. However, spirituality is the finest essence and the perfection of religion. It represents the core principles of religion. It gives a higher purpose to religion. All these three points are very important, and I would request all of you to please keep this in mind. Spirituality is the essence of religion. If somebody is religious, but is not aware of the core principles, the spiritual part of the religion, then that person's religion is only a superficial thing. It must be very deep. Generally, the religiosity of people is materialistic. So people go to ask for material things. Please give me money, God. Please give me this. And there is a funny incident that I like to tell many times. Even last year when I addressed the students, I narrated the same little joke. You've all heard of Balaji in Tirupati. So many people go there and they have some materialistic idea. Not everybody, but many people do that. So one person was a businessman. So he thought he will cut a deal with God. So he said, look, I have a business contract that I'm hoping to clinch. And if I get that, then I will make 5 lakh rupee profit. So if you let me have it, then I will give you 50%. So he made this deal with Lord Balaji in Tirupati. So he prayed and he came back. And then the business deal happened, but he made only 2.5 lakh profit, not the 5 lakh that he was anticipating. So then time passed, and then Lord Balaji appeared to him in his dream. He said, hey, what happened? You were supposed to give me 50%. I have not seen you since that time. You have got your profit. And where are you? I haven't seen you since then. So he said, look, you already kept the 50% with you in the beginning. So now why should I give you another 50% from what you have? So in this way, people approach God in whichever religion with some materialistic idea. That is not spirituality. Okay, it is better to approach God for money than to rob a bank, that's for sure. So better than robbing a bank, go and ask God, give me some money. But better than asking God for money, understand the core spiritual essence. Whatever your religious faith may be, it does not matter. Try to understand the core philosophical principles and the spiritual essence of your religion. So true religion or spirituality is not meant for merely fulfilling some materialistic goals. It is meant to educate us, to train us, to rise beyond them, not to simply be absorbed in them. So therefore, in practical terms, this word true has somehow come in. This shouldn't be there. Some typing mistake. So in practical terms, spirituality means, first of all, understanding spiritual knowledge. Now, before you become a doctor, you have to understand so many subjects. In the first year, you will have anatomy, physiology and biochemistry, right? Biochemistry. You don't have surgery in the first semester. As soon as you come, right after your orientation is over, they take you and make you cut up the body. No. That will come much later. Because your fundamental knowledge has to be strong. So only when you start doing practical things, you have to have a background of theory. That goes for any subject, in any field. So similarly, even for spiritual science, we need to have a strong theoretical foundation. We must understand this knowledge. So in practical terms, spirituality means that we must understand the spiritual knowledge thoroughly, the spiritual concepts. Then, following that, based on that spiritual knowledge, some connection somewhere. Yeah. Then based on what you have understood, something is fluctuating. So based on what you have understood, you have to perform some practices. Just like when you do your theoretical chemistry or biochemistry, then you will go to the lab and you will actually have experiments to do in the laboratory. and they go side by side. So the theory and the practical go together, and so also it is with spiritual science. And also, thirdly, very importantly, spirituality is not merely a theoretical thing. It is not something that you do only for yourself, but when you are a spiritualist, then it must manifest in your behavior, in your mindset, in your speech. So we must develop qualities like kindness, compassion, humility, forgiveness, freedom from greed, anger, ego, and other such bad habits and bad tendencies. This is very important. Otherwise, there is no meaning to be a spiritualist. If there is hatred in the heart, if there is ego, there is greed, there is feeling of enmity towards others, then we cannot be genuine spiritualists. So now, what is the connection between medicine and spirituality? I have spoken briefly earlier about what the ancient Indian knowledge teaches us about this. Let me give you a small point of what Charaka. Incidentally, I wish, along with all the posters, we also had some posters of Charaka and Sushrut and others who gave us so much about anatomy and physiology and surgery and so on. They also did a lot in these areas. So, traditionally, there are four things that are important for successful treatment. You have the doctor, medicine, medical attendants, and the patient. Now, can you tell me which of these four is the most important? Anyone, please raise your hand. Yes. Patient. Okay. Anybody else? There are only four guesses possible, so. Anybody else? Which of these four is the most important? Huh? Please raise your hand so I know who's speaking. Yes?
Doctor.
Doctor. Okay. Why? Oh. Oh, so I gave it away. I didn't see myself. All right. Okay. Okay, so just remember next time we have to, okay? We have to keep it as a suspense. Now, it is natural that we think it's the patient, because after all, the other three exist for the sake of the patient, right? Everybody has to have some qualities. The patient is usually impatient, isn't it? There is a reason why the patient is called patient, because the patient must learn to be patient. But usually the patient is never patient. Patient always wants quick results. And they want something very fast. And they come and talk to other patients and then they criticize the doctor or something. We had one doctor who kept many thermometers on his table. So when one patient went inside, he asked the doctor, "Doctor, you need only one thermometer when you have a patient. Why do you keep so many 8-10 different thermometers over here?" So he replied, "You know, when the patients sit in the waiting room, they simply gossip and they ask each other about the medicine and the charges, and they create such a bad negative atmosphere that I tell my nurse, and she goes and puts a thermometer in the mouth and they all sit like that quietly. And I have a very peaceful waiting room." So patients are very rarely patient. So even though these other three exist for the sake of the patient, it is actually the doctor who is most important. The medicine is definitely important and required. The medical attendants are required. But it is the doctor who is the most important factor in this whole thing for successful treatment. The kind of requirements that traditionally we have seen in India that are necessary to be a good doctor are very interesting. So I will tell you some of them, because all of you are going to be doctors. So it is important for you to reflect on these things. Now, the first three are very easy and commonsensical. The doctor must have detailed knowledge of diseases and treatments, must have extensive practical experience, must have practical skill. This is common sense. Any doctor must be good in the subject. Otherwise, what is the meaning of being a doctor? Otherwise, you have heard that Hindi saying, Neem Hakim Khatre Jaan. Have you heard that? Neem Hakim Khatre Jaan means you go to a quack and your life is in danger. You never know what will happen. So a doctor must be competent in the medical subjects, theoretically and practically. But also very important is purity of body and mind. So not only must the doctor be clean in the body, but also must be clean and pure in the mind. The doctor's mind must be free of greed and anger and such negative emotions. It indicates the doctor must be a spiritually oriented person. Unless one is so spiritually oriented, it is difficult to have a pure mind. And when you don't have a pure mind, you cannot treat the patient in the best possible way. Some other important qualities of a doctor. The doctor has to be courageous. Perhaps not in the way of a soldier in the battlefield, but also courageous in the sense of dealing with the patient's life-threatening issues, with the diseases, dealing with the patient's relatives. So, because life is at stake, so the doctor sometimes needs to be courageous, has to be intelligent to manage critical situations, must be endowed with moral virtues. You see, today, the standard is that so long as you are technically competent in your field of work, then you are considered a good professional. But that is not the traditional Indian way of looking at it. Competence in your field is very important, but it is not everything. Your moral virtues, your moral character is very, very important. It is only with that you become a complete doctor. So this was stressed very much in the ancient medical sciences in India. The doctor must be endowed with good speech, must be truthful, must be humble, must be friendly to patients. But also it is cautioned that you should not become too friendly with patients also, because then they will take you for granted and they will not take you seriously. So don't be harsh with them. Be kind to them, be humble, but don't be too friendly also. And the role of the doctor is much more than the treatment of diseases according to our tradition. The doctor must also play a role in helping the individual reach the ultimate spiritual goal of self-realization, which is not possible without a healthy body and mind. Because ultimately, if only the body is healthy and we don't have spiritual knowledge, we will misutilize the body for something that will actually cause us great harm. The doctor must also be a philosopher. If you go out, I was just in the anatomy and other departments, and I saw Leonardo da Vinci. He was a polyglot or a polymath. He was an engineer, he designed some aeronautical devices. He was also an astronomer, he was a mathematician, he was a poet, he was a philosopher, he was also a medical person on anatomy and physiology, he wrote some things. So you see, a doctor is not supposed to be only just a doctor. The doctor must have a larger understanding of life. And spirituality being such an important part of life, the doctor must be well versed in that, so that he or she can also assist the patient move higher in the intellectual and spiritual dimension of life. So therefore, this doctor must take spirituality very seriously in his or her own life also, and must lead a life of integrity, simplicity, and be without greed. You know, the other day, some months ago actually, I was talking to one young student who had just passed out of medical college. And So his father was already, he was spiritually inclined, but somehow his father was not. So his father was very materialistic. So his father was looking out for a marriage match for him. So the father was looking at some families, and the discussion in the home was, we have to find a girl whose family will be able to give us large dowry, crores of dowry. Why? Because I have spent so much on you for your medical education. And also for your PG seat, I will be spending a lot of money. And after you finish, then I will be helping you setting up the hospital. So naturally, your wife, whoever becomes your wife, must also now bring this money with her. So the son was talking to me about this. And I said, such is a sad state of affairs in our country today, that we have become so materialistic, that we are even thinking of purchasing wives and husbands. We are thinking only in terms of money. So when people become so money-minded, then what will they do when they become doctors? Then they will only try to extract that money because they have paid huge donations, they have so much equipment, they have to pay for it, and they will resort to unethical practices to recover that money. So money, doctors generally will earn decently. They will earn well if they are good doctors. So earning money is never going to be a major problem for a doctor. But if a doctor becomes greedy, then he or she will never be able to do justice to the patient. He or she will never be actually a good doctor, really speaking. So it is very important that all of you who are embarking on your medical careers through education now, when the situation is so materialistic nowadays, by the time you pass out from your post-graduation, which may take another 8 years from now, or whatever number of years, who knows how materialistic the society would have become. So it is very important that you imbibe these principles and these values in your life, in your mind, that at least you will not do what that boy was being forced to do. The boy, of course, put his foot down. He said, no, I'm not going to buy a wife like this. So he put his foot down, and ultimately there was a lot of quarreling in the house, but he stood his ground. He said, we will not accept any dowry like this forcefully. And we will not enter into a marriage relationship only because of money. So he put his foot down because he had this principle, he had these values in his mind. So even in your medical practice, please keep this in mind. It is very important that we have a society where our doctors will be full of integrity and who will set a wonderful example to the society. So the goal of a doctor is not only for selfish purposes of fulfilling worldly gains and desires, but it is for the sake of helping others getting relief from suffering. So we have to revive that old mood of wanting to become a doctor to serve humanity at large. We have to revive that spirit of care and service and make that prominent in the medical profession. As I said earlier, there are indeed many who are like that, but they are unfortunately nowadays in a minority. So medicine is a noble profession meant for the welfare of the patient and not making money for glamour and prestige. Glamour, prestige, money will come of its own accord. Don't worry about it. Just do your medical practice nicely. Take care of your patients ethically, sincerely, competently, and everything else will come. So there is a Sanskrit shloka that says, Sarve bhavantu sukhinah, let everybody be happy, sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah, let everybody be free from disease. Sarve bhatrani pashyantu. Let everybody see things that are auspicious. Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet. Let there be no suffering for anyone. Om shanti shanti shanti. Let there be peace and peace everywhere. This is the spirit in which you can approach your medical careers. So I will end here, and if we have time, do we have time for some questions? So if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. And I would like to offer my heartfelt best wishes to all of you who are embarking on your medical education and your medical career. May God bless you with the right kind of skills, the right kind of mindset, the right kind of approach to life, so that you can actually do good to the society at large. I would also like to thank the authorities of JNOC for having invited me here for this talk. And I do hope that sessions like this will go on. It is indeed very praiseworthy that the authorities of the college have even decided to have a topic like this. So I would like to extend my appreciation to the college authorities for this. Thank you very much once again. So if you have questions, you may raise your hand and the mic will come to you. Or if you have something to write down, there is a sheet of paper coming up, you can also write your questions on that sheet. Meanwhile, if anybody wants to ask a question on the microphone, you can do that till others write their questions on the... Yes, some mic can be given here. Okay, very nice. What's your name?
So it's Aditya Raj.
Okay, Aditya, very good question. What does it really mean to be spiritual? Does it simply mean that we should not be materialistic? Does it mean that we should be godly? Yes, both. I think maybe you can switch that off. Yeah. So it means all of that. At the very least, we must not be materialistic, number one. Number two, it is important for a doctor to also be godly. Do you know why? I will ask you one question. Is it important for a doctor to believe in God? Doesn't matter what religion you follow. That's another question. Anyone? Any of you would like to answer this question?
Yes, because there's a hope beyond religion.
Because?
We hope for the Christian. So we approach God. The ultimate thing will go, we will pray our level best as a doctor, but the ultimate is with the God, like the hope is there.
Yes. The sentence that you now said is very correct. Please sit down. What is your name?
Sanjana.
Sanjana, okay. So, as doctors, you will try your best. But, as you will see in the course of your medical career, and when you talk to doctors, they will tell you that there are some higher powers at play. And, sometimes the doctors do their best and then say, we just leave it to God. Have you heard that? Even as a patient or a relative of a patient, even if you have the best medicines, you have the best medical skill, the best medical technology and facilities, but ultimately there are things that are beyond the control of the human being. That is where God comes in the picture. Every wise doctor will understand that I am not the end all and be all in the process of getting the patient to be recovered again from his or her illness. In Sanskrit, there is a saying, Vaidyo Narayano Harihi, which means that ultimately God is the healer. So the doctor is ultimately an instrument. The medicines are instruments. The technology is an instrument. So the doctor, the medicines, the medical attendants, the technology all work together to act as an instrument in the hands of God. So when a doctor understands this, the doctor understands the reality of the situation. The doctor does not become proud thinking it's only because of my skill that I have diagnosed or treated this patient properly. The skill of the doctor, as important as it is, the grace of God is also very important. So spirituality means that the doctor must have this kind of approach also. Okay? Yes. Okay, one question here. This question has been asked by Kushi. Does spiritualism promote minimalism? Very interesting. I'm surprised pleasantly that some of you have even heard this term. Who's Kushi? Okay. Now you have a lot of Kushi. Does spiritualism promote minimalism? You know what is minimalism? Minimalism means you try to live with the minimum possible luxuries and comforts and belongings and possessions. That's a minimalist. So the question is, does spiritualism promote minimalism? Well, in a sense, yes. But you don't need to be an absolute minimalist, because that is essentially for those who are renounced. For those who are living in the world, you will need your car, you will need your mobile phone, you will need some facility at home. So the idea is not minimalism, but the idea is optimalism. Not maximalism, not minimalism, but optimalism. Whatever is optimally required for you to maintain a decent standard of living with decent comfort, not too much, not too little, so that you can live your life in a holistic and complete way. So can a maximalist be a spiritual person or practice spirituality? Well, the word maximalist indicates a very materialistic person. If a materialistic person, excessively materialistic, it will be difficult for him or her to practice spirituality. But a wealthy person can practice. There is a difference between a wealthy person and a maximalist person. A maximalist person may be very poor, but wants, has unending desires. A wealthy person may be wealthy just by dint of his own efforts or by inheritance or in any other way. Such a person can indeed practice spirituality also. Okay? Next question. At what point of your life did you understand spirituality and how? Any specific incidents? I came across spirituality during my student days. I was also a student just like you. I was a little older. That is when I came across. I had some friends who were in spirituality, and that is how I took to it. If I may ask, Anurag says, what is your life's ultimate goal? I really could not find an answer to this question. Okay. So for me, since I am a follower of the Bhagavad Gita, the ultimate goal of life is to become a pure devotee of God, selflessly loving God with pure love, no tinge of self-interest in that. That purity of love is my ultimate goal of life. Following such a state of consciousness, the Bhagavad Gita says, one becomes free from the cycle of birth and death, and one attains to a spiritual dimension which is eternal. But that is a deep subject. So Anurag, I hope I have answered your question, even though it is very brief. Yes.
Is that called moksha?
That is moksha, but moksha in the way that I explained it. Yes. Okay?
There is one question on the moksha.
Sorry?
One question.
Yes, yes. Aditya, right?
Sir, medicine is an evidence-based science, while believing in God is a faith-based belief system. So would there be a disconnect between the two belief systems? How someone who believes in an evidence-based science believe in God?
Thank you, Aditya. Actually, I'm very happy to hear the quality of your questions. I'm really happy. Many times when I go to colleges, they don't ask very good questions. It's a very good question. The question is that modern medicine is an evidence-based science, whereas spirituality is a faith-based science or a field of knowledge. So, can you as a doctor practice something that is faith-based? Is that your question?
Sir, would there be a disconnect between the two belief systems?
Will there be a clash in the two belief systems? Okay, actually it's a big topic. It's a topic in itself. But let me try to summarize it in terms of bullet points. Number one, spirituality is also an evidence-based body of knowledge. Now, when you speak of evidence, what do you mean? There is a hypothesis, then there's observation of phenomena. You make a hypothesis to explain that. You test that hypothesis by some experiment. If it succeeds, you verify that hypothesis, it becomes a law. And that is called evidence-based. Am I right? Initially, you make a hypothesis. Similarly with spiritual life. If you don't have that understanding right now, or that faith, accept it as a hypothesis. Now with that hypothesis, there is an explanation already given. You may not be able to appreciate or believe in that hypothesis even. Now, you do that experiment. You go deeper into that body of knowledge. You perform practically what that science or that body of knowledge asks you to do. Then there is verification. When you experience what is prescribed, what is predicted, then you understand it's evidence-based. One of the characteristics of evidence-based science is predictability. If you do this, then you can predict that this will happen. If you give paracetamol to such a patient, this is likely to happen. If it doesn't happen, there is another cause and go. Predictability is important. So here also, when you're asked to follow a certain set of do's and don'ts, following a certain body of knowledge, there is a predictable outcome. So when that outcome happens as predicted, it is evidence-based. So spiritual science is also evidence-based. Although the fundamental difference between spiritual knowledge and medical knowledge is that medical knowledge is based on an empirical understanding. The knowledge is on observation only, whereas spirituality is founded on sources of knowledge that are imparted to humanity from divine sources, from greatly self-realized spiritual personalities who have actually realized that knowledge. Therefore, there is no conflict between the two. And also, I'd like to make another point without making it too long, the answer. That all the empirical based sciences, including medical science, are also based to some degree on faith. Faith on your senses, faith on your diagnostic equipment. How many times the technology can mislead you? Those who are practicing doctors, maybe you can ask them how sometimes technology can be very misleading. How clinical diagnosis can sometimes be misleading. So therefore, we have faith in a lot of things. We have faith in our senses, we have faith in our scientific models, and we have faith in them because they seem to work. There is an element of predictable outcome. So there is some faith. So no body of knowledge is devoid of faith. So it is wrong to say that spirituality is blind faith. Faith is there everywhere, but you can test it. So the testability and predictability are criteria that will apply also to the spiritual field. Okay? So no conflict. Yes.
So you talk about not being materialistic. So would being ambitious in your career to achieve something means not for money but for respect or if you want to rank up the ladder. So would that be also materialistic?
Well, there is no harm in being ambitious. But in the course of being ambitious, don't resort to unethical practices. Don't exploit others. Don't cause pain to others unnecessarily. And don't give up your spirituality. Don't give up your spiritual search in your ambition to succeed in your material life. If your ambition is circumscribed by this understanding, then that ambition is all right. Okay? One or two last questions, I think. We are running out of time, aren't we? How do you start to practice spirituality as a medical student? I will say first you need to get medical spiritual knowledge. So for those of you who wish, I will be giving some feedback forms, and there are classes that are arranged on spiritual knowledge. If you wish to obtain that spiritual knowledge, then you're welcome. That can be a good starting point. Is it important to know your ultimate goal of life? If it is, has it already been decided for you? Yes, it is very important to know the ultimate goal of life, because without that, what are we living for? So this is the most fundamental point in life. So I think we'll stop with the questions here, because you have other classes, you have a whole schedule ahead of you. But before I conclude, I just want to introduce you to one doctor who has passed out of your college as an MBBS from here, and he has gone on to do his DNB in a very unpopular field, family medicine, when he had options to do so many other fields. And now he has come back. He hails from Agra, but he has come back now to Belgaum because he completely wants to serve the people in the villages, and he wants to be non-commercial in his life. He also has to settle down in his life and earn his livelihood. At the same time, he doesn't want to go into the normal routine of medical life. So he has started a small clinic in a village which is about 35 kilometers from here, or 30 roughly kilometers in the village. And he goes to different villages every day. And he has a wonderful project and a wonderful vision where he actually wants to reach out to the villagers who are poor, and he wants to help them in some way, in an integrated, holistic capacity. So he is Dr. Sparsh Agarwal. Sparsh, you can come here. When did he pass out?
2017.
In 2017, he finished his MBBS. He comes from a wealthy family. His parents are more than happy to build a whole big hospital for him so he can run it. But he didn't do it. His parents were here. Initially, they were a little skeptical. But then they saw his work, we spoke to them, they went to the places. Now they are so proud of him. They are so happy. So here is a person who is treading a different path. He is very conscious about being skilled in his subjects. He's a very good doctor. And at the same time, he understands that while money is important, he wants to bring back that culture of serving in the medical profession, service and care as a prominent feature of the profession today. So, Sparsh, do you want to say something of what you are doing? Yes. Just in 2 minutes so that we don't delay their classes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for introducing me.
Maybe you speak in this. Come here. Speak in this.
Thank you, Maharaj, for introducing me. After a long time, I'm coming to this classroom. Exactly 10 years back, I was sitting right over here, and I'm feeling very happy to be back over here. And it was not possible without your guidance. And I remember exactly before 10 years or 11 years, the same induction program was conducted. And that led me to think, actually, that what our real lives are meant for. And as in our medical colleges, we went forward, and when I did my internship, so that idea was actually clicking me that actually I belong to the business family. And I joined, one of the main reasons for joining this medical profession and joining the MBBS college, that I didn't want it to be so much, that money didn't click me so much. But during my internship days, it was the same scenario everywhere. So actually then I told my parents, I don't want to continue, MBBS enough, I'll do something. And everyone told, no, you should do something. Then I found this family medicine branch, and I found it really interesting. And before taking, it was my first attempt. But on the internet, when I saw on the Google, 99.99% were the negative reviews about this branch. There is no prestige, there is no reputation. But what I found, that actually I want to do this only. I wanted to work as a GP, as a village, want to do good, want to provide good care to the villagers, and I should take this branch. My parents were a little skeptical, but then with the guidance of everyone, I ended up taking this branch, and I'm really happy. And now we have initiated a rural healthcare project near Belgaum in Jamboti village. And actually, it's been 2 months only, but in these 2 months, I worked in a corporate hospital also before. But there's so much difference in these two approaches, because here I feel empowered. Here I feel that what I actually wanted to do, what is my vision, the sky is open. I can do anything here. It's just upon me that how I want to serve. There are many cases, right now there is no time actually to discuss it, but one brief I would like to discuss. One patient recently, young male, came to me. He was having rectal pain, and eventually he was found to have the rectal cancer. Now the social part of the medicine is completely different. I sent him to a appropriate specialty in Belgaum. There he was diagnosed, the biopsy was done, he was diagnosed to have this rectal cancer. And there he was told that maybe a total colectomy, this vulvicolostomy will be done. And he was very much afraid. And then he didn't turn up to the hospital. 1 week, so we have made a system of following up the patients. Usually the chronic patients, we click, this is a red flag, and he needs a constant follow-up, and the most important follow-up, and like that we have made a system. So I called up this patient. So he was a bit hesitant. No, I'll go. I called up that patient, and then I discussed. So the family part was completely different. Basically, he had no one to support. His father was in a different world. His brother was working, not very supportive. So then, and he was planning for some different therapies. No, I'll go to some different herbal remedies. So basically, and he was like, nahi, isse achha toh marna achha hai. Ye pouch vouch, ye sab toh nahi chahiye kuch bhi. So there I found actually what is the meaning of a holistic health. So there actually we discussed, we sat, there were 2-3 people, and I discussed with him the aspects of the spiritual aspects of the life, the other aspects of the life. I discussed with the herbal practitioners with whom he was planning to take the treatment. And then I told him this scenario, sir, are you actually confident that you can treat him? Then I'm ready to send this patient to you. But are you ready to take the responsibility of this patient? Then he also told, no, till now what patients we have treated, they were already operated. His operation is not done yet. Then I explained to the patient, see, this is the scenario. There is no harm in adopting other therapies for 6 months or 1 year. But the most important thing which you will be losing is the time. And if after 1 year from allopathy side also, if we have nothing to offer you, then ultimately it's your life which will be playing with. So then he understood. Then there were a lot of discussions with him over a period of days, spiritual discussions about the negativity which was coming to his mind. And then he got convinced. And currently he is taking treatment. His almost 8-9 radios are completed. Now he's feeling better. So this is the aspect of the holistic health which we can do. So as a doctor, I now feel really empowered that we can cross the boundaries of these four walls of a hospital, and actually the work which we can do is great, is really great, and it is really very much encouraging to work in such a manner. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Sparsh. Dr. Sparsh Agarwal, just a living example of what we have been talking about. It is not some utopia, not some idealistic thing. Practically, there are young people also who are inspired by such motives to do such activities. So we will conclude the program here. Thank you very much.
Enlighting us with your spiritual words, and thank you students for listening to Swamiji. So now I request our Vice Principal Sir to hand over token of gratitude to Maharaj Sir.
Firstly, I would like to thank Swamiji Sir for spending his valuable time and enlightening all the our newly joined students regarding spirituality. And I just would like to share some of the things what I experienced in last few years. At least out of 200 students, at least you can say 2-5% of students, they have taken this profession forcefully because of their parents. So mainly the parents want to make their children the doctor, and in fact their intention is to make them have a secured life in future. But the many of the times the students have their own view of doing certain things in future. For such students to become a doctor, especially to keep the whatever the expectation of the parents, and also how to transit from that negativity and away from whatever the expectation of the parents, what is your advice to them?
Yes, it is a difficult dilemma because many times the parents are more ambitious than the children, and the parents push in a certain way. But regardless, once these students are here, they should see it as an opportunity rather than as an obstruction. It is an opportunity to do something good in life. Because the medical profession is indeed a very noble profession, if one can see it like that. So, if through this profession you can do so much good to the society, even if your parents are compelled to come here, there is no harm. At the end of the day, you end up doing something that is very satisfying to the society and to yourself also. So, take a very positive approach and take your studies very seriously. Take up this profession in a noble spirit in which it is supposed to be taken.
Thank you, Swamiji. So what Swamiji sir has told, whatever your parents' intention, it might be even materialistic, but you turn it to the at least service oriented and keep yourself happy. Whatever you're doing, it is for the betterment of our society, it is going to be your future. So always the Ramakrishna Ashram and the Swamiji's have always enlightened us. They affirmed the youth of our country is the future, and always they wanted our, even the medical students, to be in this field to shine, and the best example being our Dr. Sparsh Agarwal, who is our alumnus. So I think even at least 2-5% of the students, they turn up and they do their duty, and even our National Medical Commission from this year onwards, they have brought many of the things, especially the yogasana, the spirituality, the mental health, and other aspects. It is not only just in the foundation course, these activities are going to happen throughout the course. With that, from the behalf of our management, I thank once again to Swamiji for sparing the valuable time. Thank you, sir. Distributed also. Thank you so much.